Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
I'm Yujiro.
Welcome back, Yujiro.
Welcome back.
You sound like you're surprised to be welcomed back. Yes.
I wouldn't say surprised.
Mediocre? Nonplussed?
Indifferent?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Indifferent. Alright, so I wanted to announce that we're going to run a contest for the month of February. It's going to run from February 8th until March 7th.
Did you just say 8th?
Did I say 8th?
It sounded like...
Sorry.
February 8th.
All right, I guess I can't take the ghetto out of my speech. All right. Yeah. So it's going to run from February 8th to March 7th.
And get 50% off.
Have I finished the announcement? All right. So anyway, what we're going to do is anyone who leaves a comment on one of our episodes on Drive-Thru RPG between those times, which are what, Lyle?
8th and 50. Sorry.
That was actually pretty funny, but part of me is just groaning inside. All right, so the month of February, we'll say. Anyone who leaves a comment on one of our episodes on Drive-Thru RPG in the month of February will be entered into a drawing for a $10 gift certificate to Drive-Thru RPG.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah, well, it's a fantastic contest.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And I'd also like to announce that for reading his email on air on the last episode, Alpha Dean is going to also receive a $10 gift certificate to Drive-Thru RPG.
It's kind of like our January unannounced contest.
Yes, yeah, it was our January unannounced contest.
Yeah, kind of a thank you for talking to us.
Yes,
prize.
Exactly. I was trying to hopefully make it not sound so sad, but thanks, Chris. Yeah. All right.
Wayne's mom gets a lot of those $10. Well, thank you, Wayne. I don't know.
Can I use these at other places? No, just drivethroughrpg.com. Oh, okay.
I've been meaning to take up this hobby.
So anyway, any comment at all, hopefully positive. So we'll announce those on, I believe it'll be March 7th. Or no, it'll be the next week. So hopefully we'll get some comments.
Yes, please write us.
Okay, that sounds really, really sad.
Thank you.
We can go one more. Please talk to us.
You know, you could also be part of the contest, possibly, Andrew.
No thanks.
Okay. Right, now that just sounds really
now
bad.
Now that sounds sad.
Okay, so I've read through more of the Dragon Age stuff that I got, and yep. They kind of did a similar thing to what George Strait did in The Secret Fire. In that the books are divided into, there's going to be four books, and each one is a block of five levels.
Well, four box sets.
Yeah, okay, four box sets. So in the player's guide for the first book, they'll do a section about like talents or focuses you can have, and then at the end of the chapter, they'll say, look for more focuses in sets 2, 3, and 4. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like in The Secret Fire, that kind of bothered me, because like they're giving you enough to play with, and I know they have to plug the product, and they're trying to encourage people to buy more sets after that. But it still felt kind of like you didn't need to have it.
No comment on whether like it being good or bad, but I think it's a really interesting move for like a company that produces books to do that, because that's something that the software industry has done for a long time. You can use these features up to a certain point, and then you have to pay for it. So it's an interesting model. I wonder how it'll work.
I suppose. It wasn't so much as like the free thing, mm-hmm. because these are the ones like I paid for.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to pay the initial installment, but if you want to keep going, then you have to pay.
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's kind of like getting a basic version of a piece of software and then getting advanced features when you pay again.
Yeah, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because it gives the impression that the initial core book isn't actually a core book. It's the first quarter of the core set. Maybe you can't play the game all the way through unless you buy everything. But again, you know, these companies need to make money, so
I think they'll come up with a book after all the box sets are out that will combine all the rules.
You think they will?
Yeah, I mean, that's, if Dragon Age is reasonably successful, they'll do that, and then new players can buy this new book, and older players would want to buy the book because it'll combine all the rules. So. But I mean, it seems like, you know, the basic, expert, and advanced box sets that D&D had.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think of it from that angle. Yeah.
So the red, blue, and
whatever that advanced one was.
Gosh, I'm just drawing a blank.
Black?
One of them is black, but I think that was the Advance Plus. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
I had like the super simple black box one that was super basic. I guess it's not that big a deal, but I just didn't want to come off like I was overly harsh on the Secret Fire, even though it deserved it. But
you were.
Yeah, we had to edit out about 20 pompouses out of that episode.
Yeah. So anyway, as you promised in the last episode, Lyle, we're actually going to talk about a game that we, I guess, kind of do like. For today, we're going to talk about Eclipse Phase.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about Eclipse Phase, Wayne?
Okay. So the tagline on the front of the cover is, I believe, a transhuman game of conspiracy horror, which, I don't know, I think sums up at least the style and tone of the game and what it is pretty nicely. I saw it kind of like as a hard sci-fi horror setting.
Very.
I thought it was an interesting setting. It seemed like they put a lot of thought into it, which is kind of what made me want to run the game. And I know you were pretty gung-ho about it too, Chris, even though until we got to character creation and I just told you no to everything, like
I'm
I always
used to that
do.
By now, it's all good. What I like most about it is the transhuman setting. I'm a big fan of transhuman fiction, and I find it really fascinating, and it's the first game that I've seen that uses that. I mean, there's been other
GURPS transhuman space.
Thank you, that's what I was looking for. There's like GURPS super high tech and stuff, which is quite similar to transhumanism, but it's the one that's very specifically transhumanist. And it was really interesting and exciting to play something like that. All my initial characters were something like disembodied humans or people who live in two separate bodies or uplifted animals, but didn't get to play those.
Yeah, 'cause I said no to everything.
Yeah, just for anybody who's not familiar with the system, it includes a lot of ideas like your brain is software, so you can upload yourself into a computer, you can make digital copies of yourself, you can swap bodies. Actually, that's one of the primary mechanics.
Well, obviously, you were backed up on a computer somewhere. You had the ability to.
Yeah, so you can't die.
Yeah, well, you could, but then you could just reinstate yourself from a backup copy.
Somebody, it was Anders Sandberg, said it's post-human rather than transhuman.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, transhuman is the process to becoming post-human, and post-human is then when you're kind of
No, that's human. Trans, not as in like transfer, but transcend, transcending humanity.
It's post-humanism.
And what is post-humanism then?
It means you're no longer.
No, that's
human.
What I'm saying. If you're no longer human,
right? So
then you're post-human,
right?
Whereas transhumanism is like the peak of humanity.
Oh well, if that's the definition, then yeah, I'd agree that it sounds post-human.
I don't know if these definitions. I mean, we need definitions to stuff that doesn't exist currently.
Yeah. All right. So just like other campaign confession episodes. We're going to start off with kind of discussing the system and what we liked and didn't like about it.
Cool. Where do you want to start?
Positive things. Like usual things you liked.
I, for one, I really liked the system. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was my first time with a percentile system, assuming you don't include rifts, because I didn't really use the skills. I just blew stuff up in that. But it was interesting that your checks to succeed or fail is based entirely on your character's own skill. For example, if I have a 70 rank in hacking a system on my character sheet, I roll the percentile dice. If I go over that, I fail. If I go under that, then I succeed. There are modifiers based on how difficult, say, the system is, but the basic success or fail of your roll is on my character sheet, depending on my skills. So I thought that was pretty interesting, kind of a character-centric system.
I thought we had opposed checks.
There are also opposed checks.
I liked that many what they did checks. To show how well you did something.
Oh, the
or how well you succeeded.
Yeah, that's called margin of success, and I guess it's kind of like a blackjack mechanic. Like the higher you roll on the percentile dice, while still rolling under your skill, the better you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chris said, if you have like a 70 in something, if you roll a 70, then that's a success. With a margin of success of 70.
Yeah.
If you roll over that 70, you fail.
Yeah. Anything from 0 to 70 is a success, but the closer you get to your target number is, the better.
Well, I guess the closer you get to your skill.
Your skill, yeah. Yeah, it's something, Fading Suns also did back in the day, which was, always touted as one of the highlights of that system.
I actually kind of liked it because, like, in an opposing test, right? If someone is more skilled at something, then you would think logically they would have a better chance of success.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody had a skill of 70 and their opponent had a skill of 30, both people could roll under their skill, but the person with the higher skill rating just has more of a chance of doing better, yeah. Which in my opinion is as how it should be.
Yep, no, it was good.
Yeah, definitely.
And I liked how you could spend moxie points to flip your rolls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I did like that.
Moxie points being Eclipse Phase's kind of version of Benny's or style points or things like
that. Yeah, there were other things that you could do with moxie points, but the thing we used them most often for, or you guys used them most often for, was to flip the die roll.
Mm-hmm. What else could we use them for?
You can use them to automatically go first in combat with initiative things, and even though you actually didn't really get into physical combat at all, which I feel really bad about, but essentially in this game they were all that we did with them.
That was good. Like you roll, like let's say 85, you could flip it to get a 58.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, the other thing that you got was if you got doubles, that was a critical, either a critical success if you rolled under your skill or a critical failure if you rolled over.
Which I did.
Yeah. Like there were modifiers in that as the GM, like you apply modifiers to the character's skill based on how difficult the action is or on other situational modifiers, but that always modified the player's skill rating, not the die roll, which I thought made things much easier. Okay, so you have a skill of 70, there's a 20 modifier, negative, so it's now 50, and it was just kind of a lot easier to calculate rather than affecting the die roll.
Yeah. I think it's nice that it's fluid like that. For me as a character, it's just easier to add 20 to whatever I roll to see if I succeed or fail. Oh, okay. But for the game runner, or game master, it's probably easier to look at the difficulty rating. But it's nice that you can go either way, so.
Yeah, as a game master, it was pretty easy for me to just say, okay, minus 30. Mm-hmm. And then I don't even really have to know what your skill is.
Yeah.
And you just tell me, okay, did you beat it or not?
Exactly, yeah. But, any system comments, Yuji? You're a very system-y guy.
I think everyone's already covered it. I guess if I'm going to say anything, it would be that I do like the whole margin of success system. Because with like a D20 system, even if you roll a 19 and you hit the guy, it's still no different from like rolling a 12 and hitting the guy. But yeah, that's it really.
I like the layers of distancing you put on that. If I were to say something, it might be that you sound like a politician, dude. Sorry, Lyle, yeah, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so, no problem. I found the character sheet a little bit busy.
Yes, that's true.
There is a lot because you are. And if it's the transhumanism or posthumanism theme, I suppose you would say your core character, and then the things that you sleeve into.
Yeah, that was definitely kind of confusing. And like when I was kind of setting up the one shot I was going to run, I was trying to highlight the things that made Eclipse Phase, and one of the things that I wanted to attempt to showcase was switching bodies, which I see as a big part of both the system and the setting.
I agree, yeah.
But after sort of making the characters, and I used the pre-gens from the book, but tweaked them a little bit, I said, it's going to take too long in-game to have people switch bodies. It would take like an hour, maybe a half an hour, to recalculate all your stats and your skills and mark down all the new pieces of equipment and abilities that you had. So I unfortunately didn't have time to make a second character sheet that had your second body, but during the game I just said, no, screw it, I won't even do it, just because it's going to be too much of a hassle, which is a shame, because I would have liked to see that, to see how it affected people's skills.
Yeah, if we're getting into criticisms of the game, that was a big one for me, is that character creation is massive. It's a huge undertaking, because you have, as Lyle said, your basic stats added plus your skills plus your body modifications, and each number modifies each other. Like, I programmed a spreadsheet to do it all for me, and that made it a lot easier. But man, I wouldn't even want to try doing it all on paper.
Yeah, which is what I did stupidly.
So you're okay with how easy it is to like break a character, or?
Well, one of the things I liked about it is, even though I'm a big fan of really simplistic systems like Savage Worlds, the easier the better, I also really enjoy making characters in complicated systems. I really like how you can get in and fiddle with all these little numbers to try and tweak things here and there, and with a percentile base, you know, where your skills range all the way up to 100 points or more, you can play around with the numbers a lot. That said, though, you're right, Yuji. It's a pretty easy system to break. I built my hacker with, say, at top I could get like 150% chance to break into a system.
Well, with modifiers.
Of course, yeah. Everything added altogether, yeah.
Yeah, I think the highest any skill can be is in the 90s. I forget exactly.
I think it might be 90, but I shouldn't be quoted on that.
But with modifiers, you got one of your skills up to like 150.
Something like that, yeah.
And at that point, I just said, you know what, don't even know. I'll just let you do whatever you want because there's no way I can have anyone beat you. Mm-hmm. But I like character creation too. And there are a lot of options and a lot of fun things you can do in Eclipse Phase to sort of really make the character you want.
And it really feels like your character,
too. Yeah, it does, and it really feels like your character. But then on the flip side, as you said, Chris, all the numbers kind of affect each other. And as I was running the game, and as the game master, I felt like I cheated sort of each of you simply because your characters had so much equipment and so many abilities and skills that I forgot about and I didn't keep track of, that unless the player knows their character very well and their capabilities and can say, I want to do this because I have X, or unless the game master remembers, hey, your character has this, so why don't you try and do this thing, there's just a lot to remember and a lot to forget. And
if it's any consolation, that was going to happen anyways.
I know it's going to happen anyway, but I feel bad. Like I don't feel so bad for your character, Chris, because, well, it's because you wanted to be a hacker.
And actually, I did. I had a write-up on everything.
And so you read up very extensively on the hacking rules, where I knew Lyle would kind of do well as the face character. And so I gave him a body for his character that had sort of augmentations to be a better face character. But when you met NPCs, I had you do it in a virtual meeting space where none of those were going to take effect.
Yeah.
At the time, I just kind of completely forgot about it, but now I feel like I kind of robbed Lyle's character, and I really feel like I robbed Yujiro's character because he wanted to be sort of a physical combat guy, and everything kind of happened again.
You didn't do that. We're the ones who avoided combat at all costs.
Well, yeah, you avoided combat, but...
I mean, that's going to happen in any game if you have three very different characters.
Yeah. And you give them freedom of choice.
Well, I mean, system-wise, you did screw me over, but like story-wise, story-wise, you really kept me involved.
That's
with
true. The plot was very
the secret card thingies. Like, the other guys probably didn't know it, but they didn't know it in character. But I was passing a lot of notes to Wayne and like doing all this like background stuff based on all the secret objectives.
I think you actually spent more time writing notes than talking to the other characters.
Yeah, actually I did. So, yeah. I was pretty involved, story-wise.
All right. Well, that's nothing new. You drove writing notes more than talking.
Yeah, and I was having fun. So, I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have, like, spent the time to, like, write stuff to you.
Oh,
so.
No, that's good. I don't feel quite so bad now.
Yeah, also, just going into that specifically, I really like the hacking mechanic. Ever since I played the first Cyberpunk 2020 game way back when, I've always been interested in that kind of a character, but this is the first time where it's something that you can use in-game with everybody else. Like, in Cyberpunk or in Shadowrun, you kind of have to go and have your own session with the GM, even though it's supposed to be real-time with the other characters. But this is the first time where it's almost like a kind of magic system for it. That's what really drew me to playing a hacking character, so... I think that's cool.
Having read, like, Shadowrun books, there are tricks you can use, you know, to kind of make the hacker go places or interact with people while they're doing their hacking sequence. But this one is sort of better integrated into the, not mechanics, but there's no reason why you have to separate from the group to do your hacking stuff.
And also, it makes, I suppose this is a little metagamey, but it makes the hacker a more effective character that it is a transhuman setting, because everything everywhere is connected to the internet. So, again, it's basically, it's like a technological wizard. So.
Yeah, I was looking at it the same way, too, because there's just sort of so much technology and so many kind of abilities that people could have, where it almost does become... like a kind of magic. Like when I was trying to sort of figure out how to do an investigative game, I think, okay, well, the players will have sort of these resources that they can work with, and how can I make it so that they don't just automatically find the clues?
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be all kinds of countermeasures, so it almost does become a mage's duel, essentially,
yeah,
just because the technology is sort of so advanced where there's so much you could do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, Just out of curiosity, I mean, now that you've seen what a hacker with 150% chance of success can do, like, how would you counter that in the future? Should it be countered?
Yeah, we sent a lot of emails back and forth about that.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Well, to answer your question, Yujiro, it gets a little bit into, I guess, how the GM sees people in his game. Chris saw his character as potentially one of the best hackers in the system, where I went into the game thinking, okay, the characters are just going to be kind of regular Joes. So that's why when Chris said, and I get 150 hacking, I'm like, whoa, holy crap. So an average guy just has like 150 skill. And the person who was making the opposed check against him had a skill of 30 in that. And I'm like, let's see, 150 versus 30. I'm not even going to roll anymore. As general, there is a fine line between making things difficult and kind of shutting the players down, right? Yeah. Especially in an investigation type game where you want them to find the clues and you want them to go to certain places and uncover the mystery. And you have to make it difficult so they don't feel like they got there too easily, but you can't make things too difficult where they kind of give up and walk away.
Right, right. Yeah, or too easy so that it's, you know, just a cakewalk.
So like in our example at the end, like I wanted you to go to that ship, but I could see that you guys weren't actually going to physically go onto it. So when you asked for the camera feed of the ship, I just said, yeah, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
Maybe this will entice them. It'll at least move the story along. So there you go.
Yeah, what is a regular Joe in a transhuman or post-human game?
That was a question I wanted to ask too, yeah.
Oh, that's a very good question. I don't know. I think
if you're playing like your first adventure in a game, in a normal game, even if it is a heroic game, you kind of feel that you're playing, you know, the guy just off the farm or something like that. You're not playing an epic hero. But when you can manipulate your body to the extent that you can in Eclipse phase, like why would you make yourself a mediocre hacker? Yeah. I mean, there's certain like an economic limitations that would be built into the game. You know, if you can't afford a supreme sleeve, then there's that. But if you don't have those restrictions, then the person is going to stat themselves out to be supremely effective in a certain area. And that is in keeping with the game. It's like a game with no regular Joes. And I think that gets into, I guess, more of the setting.
Yeah, I guess it does. Like, part of the reason why I kind of assumed you guys would be regular Joes is, at least from my perspective, it's a horror game. And in most horror stories, the protagonists are not helpless, but definitely at a disadvantage. So going into it kind of like that, and I don't know, I also saw it as a bit of a dystopian world, because there are kind of some pretty messed up things going on.
I agree, the setting is very dystopian, and it's like we said in the previous podcast, the difference between a horror movie and an action movie is how much control the characters have over their fate. But that doesn't mean that they have to be powerless or average at all, it just means that the forces moving against them have to be able to have more control over the outcome.
I guess for me, personally, like, if your characters are incredibly powerful, then, like, I agree, in a horror movie or a horror story, the characters don't have to be powerless, but the antagonist they're going up against has to be in more control than they are. So if you're talking about power levels, I tend to think things get a bit kind of ridiculous if you have to scale up because the main characters are already so powerful, where I see it just easier to scale back and make the players kind of more average rather than the enemies or the antagonists that much more powerful.
There's so many avenues of approach, though, through this. I mean, there's the technological one, there's psionics, there's actual physical, there's economic, there's social. If there's any area that the characters are deficient in, you can go after them in that direction rather than scaling up. But I suppose that's kind of getting away to what-ifs.
No.
I mean, it is a game. One of their taglines is that it's a game of conspiracy and horror. And that's what I found a little bit of a disconnect, because we're not transhumans or posthumans. So the things that are horrific for us, which were in the adventure, and they were like truly disturbing images.
Which is why I wanted to run that one.
and it was great. But then, you do get disturbed, which is, on the one hand, that's really good for the horror game. But on the other hand, when we took a step back and thought, but would a post-human actually be disturbed by that? Because one thing is the concept of mortality or death is very different now. And the things that we generally use to elicit that horrific reaction revolve around death or dismemberment and disturbing images like that, whereas that no longer applies because your body is now just a sleeve. You're not confined to it anymore.
And you won't remember it anyway.
Yeah.
You do die, so.
Yeah, and if you die, then you just upload again.
Yeah, you have a backup somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, now we've seen, like, when you watch, like, Battlestar Galactica and what happens to the Cylons, constantly resurrecting. You know, that can be a very traumatic experience. Mm. But yeah, what does it mean? What would be horrific for a transhuman? Probably be more horrific to dismember different hard drives in front of them. If those hard drives contain somebody.
Not a magnet.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're wiping out the information, then whoever you're wiping out, if they ever were to actually die, it's a true death now. There's no backup copy of them.
That's definitely a good point. And that is one of the kind of the things they talk about in the book, is that, you know, if an assassin or, you know, wouldn't just kill the body, they would go after the backup copies. If you played a longer game, I think that could be more horrific, you know, as you figure out that someone's kind of slowly erasing all your backup copies until you're eventually the kind of the only one. But that gets back into the disconnect you mentioned, Lyle, because, like, we as mortal humans, the players, like, is that scary to us? Probably not, because we don't have any concept of that, whereas the things that would be kind of scary or horrific to us probably wouldn't be so to our characters. So
I think you just have to find themes that invoke horror that don't revolve around death. Things that are like the collapse of society. I mean, they say that this transhumanity in the system is just hanging on by a thread. Things like zombification, things where maybe you get infected by this horrible virus that mutates your body. So you continue living, i.e. you don't get a backup, but you're no longer yourself, or you're enslaved by a corporation. The whole paranoia of all these giant corporations and aliens and whatnot. That's a lot to play with, yeah.
We did run a published module, because we did a one-shot. But before I decided to do that, I was trying to go for the sort of the corporate angle, mm-hmm. Enslavement, disturbing but not from death sort of mm-hmm. angle, because I kind of saw what you guys are saying now and said, okay, well, you know, I can't just kill them mm-hmm. or have people die around them, because that's not really going to be that scary for someone who can just re-upload again.
Right.
Yeah, and even if you, like, distort the body, I mean, people put themselves into very outlandish or mm-hmm. very bizarre sleeves already. So what's a deformed human now?
Means somebody paid for it and wanted to look that way, essentially.
Yeah. Still get on the angle where some people want that and some people don't. I mean, even nowadays, some people enjoy cutting themselves. I don't particularly enjoy being cut.
Isn't that a psychosis, cutting yourself?
It is, yeah. But just saying, like, if somebody
Maybe a tattoo
setting,
would be a better analogy, maybe.
I suppose, if you were...
Scarification, okay. Piercing. Yeah. I will say, like, they do have game mechanics for lost time, like if you die and you have to back up from something that's 2 weeks old or a month old or older. Mm-hmm. And every time you sleeve into a new body, you do have to make a test to see how well you adapt to this new body. So the game designers have tried to put mechanics in there, which on the one hand, it's okay. It kind of tries to show that, you know, there are these things in the setting, mm-hmm. but I wonder how well that comes across. I did have you guys essentially your character sleeve into a new body, mm-hmm. only because we did the first half of the story in a VR space, so you weren't actually in a body. Mm-hmm. And when you guys made your roles to come into a new body, all of you passed, but even passing is kind of a bit of a detriment, because it gives you sort of negatives to your abilities. And mm-hmm. I don't know, it didn't feel like it was sort of having to adjust to a new body. I just kind of felt like I was screwing you over for the rest of the story.
Penalty, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? And it's not a problem with the setting or the system in and of itself. I would just mm-hmm. recommend, if people are going to play something like Eclipse Phase, it is really out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They should read a transhuman or posthuman novel. It just so happens I picked up Dan Simmons' Ilium afterwards, and I did that because of the Iliad. So I thought, oh, that would be pretty cool. But there's a lot about posthumanism mm-hmm. in the book, and I was like, oh, that would have been good to, like, draw from mm-hmm. when I played the game. So, yeah, that would be my recommendation, because you really have to just get into that mindset.
Yeah, you've been recommending that book at work.
I thought there was two, I mean, there's probably a lot of things that you can play with in the game, but the two that really stand out, of course, is, like, what does it mean to be human? And the other thing is what we did with the information highway or how that's evolved.
Hmm.
And everything's in the clouds now, and some tech clouds. The clouds in a technological perspective.
Everything's a giant distributed network, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we did a lot with the information.
Hmm.
And what does that mean is if everything's there at your fingertips, we didn't move. Like our characters just kind of like stayed in one, we did all these investigative things in one location.
Mm. Yeah.
As we searched the
seconds.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, we did. We got a lot out of that and that experience, but it was just too much to do that and explore the humanity in one adventure.
Yeah, definitely true. Yeah.
I was saying to Wayne in an email, I think this game would be fantastic to play online, like over Skype or something. Because you could mimic a lot of the transhuman experience with that. I mean, first there's the dehumanization of just being kind of physically separate from the other players, but there's instant messaging. You can, because your characters can send almost telepathic messages between each other. And, of course, Eclipse Phase, they've put all of their stuff up online in a wiki. So if you ask the GM, you know, tell me about this planet and do a research role, you can just link into that wiki and get all the stats and population and whatnot of that system right away, just like your character actually would. So I know you're not that interested in the online game, but I think this game specifically would be really good with that.
I kind of agree and I kind of don't. Like, I was going to say, like, if there would be any game, I kind of would be more willing to play across like Skype or something. It would possibly be Eclipse Phase because of the things that you've mentioned.
Mm.
But I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of like a hard ass GM in that, like, giving characters the freedom to say or the players to say, go research this on your own.
Mm-hmm.
They might find something that
I don't want them to find
or that I have changed. And I still kind of like being able to control what information the characters find.
Mm.
So, like, it is still, even though it's a published setting, it's not going to have the tweaks that I've
put into. You're right. It does restrict you as a GM. But
yeah, I'm a very restrictive GM.
I've noticed. Yeah. Can I play this? No.
But
actually, that's something, too. Why didn't you want me playing a disembodied person or an uplifted animal?
So you wanted to play a person that had no body. And
yes.
I saw it as you would kind of be limited in the interactions you could have with the other characters. Mm-hmm. And if you exist on the network, essentially, pretty much all someone has to do is pull a plug and your character is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to hopefully play up the horror angle. Again, like I hadn't thought of it, but having no body, kind of what am I able to threaten? I didn't see things as being all that scary when you can just say, that guy doesn't bother me, or so what if there's a guy with a gun there, I'm inside a computer.
Now you say that, but the most threatening thing in this game that we played was a computer virus that we were all tapping into. That would have affected my computer just as much. In fact, there was nobody with a gun pointed at us.
Oh yeah, I know that. Yeah, that's my fault.
No. So I'm just saying, like, actually playing that character would have been more effective in that game. But
possibly.
But, like, for me, one of the things that's most exciting about a transhuman system is the ability to play something that's questionably not human, or in the case of an uplifted animal, just not human. So I was very surprised that you disallowed that.
I guess it gets back to the I think we've mentioned this.
Too.
I know
I cried a couple of tears.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've hardened my heart, and I'm just used to saying no all the time, so tears don't affect me, especially electronic ones.
But
I guess, like I said, I kind of see this as, I guess, a horror game. And like we said, for horror games, I think we said it before, possibly you said it, Lyle, you can't really rely on disturbing or upsetting the character.
Mm-hmm.
That won't really work for a horror game. You have to kind of work on disturbing or upsetting the player.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this sounds contradictory, but if you're playing something that is not human, how do you put yourself in that character's mindset? Like, if you play an uplifted octopus, or if you play an artificial intelligence, do you have the same concepts of fear or disgust that you as a human player does? Basically, I'm not saying you would have abused it, but in my opinion, it has the potential for abuse for the player to say, that doesn't bother me because I'm not human.
Yeah, but isn't it still worth exploring? I mean, you say, how can you look into the mind of an uplifted octopus? You don't know what it's like. Nobody does. But does that invalidate trying?
if the player just said, I'm an octopus, and that fulfills the extent of my role-playing obligations.
The guy has a gun. I don't care, I'm an octopus.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew this was going to be a short game. So if we were running a campaign, I would be more inclined to say yes, because mm-hmm. I know we would have time to explore that.
Yeah.
In a three-shot game, in a one-shot game, there's not going to be time to do anything with that. So I would just prefer to cut it out and say, no, you have to be human. And you have to have a body.
Yeah, and in the end, even though I'm whining about it, you know, it's your game, so...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's my game, so...
So shut up.
Exactly, so shut up and accept what you're given.
I think you just approached things a little bit differently than I did, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know what to expect from the game, even looking through the rule book. So I wanted to play something as close to human as possible, and then as... I guess like kind of training wheels,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of get a feel for the game. And you wanted to jump into the deep end.
Yeah, but also I'd read the rules really extensively. I was thinking of running it myself as well before I jumped on as well.
But, you know, I think what Wayne's really trying to say is you couldn't handle it.
I was trying to be nice about it. I wasn't trying to be that direct.
You can't handle the octopus.
I know that he's right, but I still want to try.
But, again, I would recommend to anybody who, even if you did read the rule book, really take like a top-notch science fiction writer such as Dan Simmons and look at what he does and see which characters you relate to. And that's the interesting thing reading the Ilium is the characters that you more relate to. I'm relating more to the, I guess you would call them the AIs or the kind of the robots
mm-hmm.
more than the post-humans. And you feel more when something happens to one of them than when something happens to the post-humans. And you'd have to read the book to understand why, and I don't want to ruin it. But it certainly helped me understand how I could play an octopus and the different ways I could do that. I could actually play a very humanist octopus.
Oh, dude.
What?
So just made a joke about Japanese schoolgirls.
Well, octopus. I mean, yeah, sorry.
Oh, the tentacles. Yeah.
So that's your requirement, Chris. If you want to play an octopus or if you want to play something that's not human, you have to read that book, Ilium.
Okay. I thought you were going to go more on with the Japanese schoolgirls.
Even then, yeah, I was going to put that.
So anyway, so Yudra, you had a couple of questions that you had sent to me on a Facebook mail that unfortunately kind of never got explored in the game, but that's probably because it was a one-shot.
Yeah, how about your character, Yuji?
I had the consciousness of a dude in a chick's body.
A dude in a chick's body, I see.
Dude in a chick's body. Yeah.
Like most of the guys on the internet.
And I didn't play with myself during the session or anything like that. I said I didn't.
Yeah, but why would your mind even go there anyway?
And that detail is not required.
Well, I figured that's kind of a natural reaction for
it wasn't.
No.
Sorry.
For a non-transhuman.
No one was going there.
The first thing I would do.
What, is to play with yourself?
Some things are better left unexplored, like the mind of Yudra. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not normal.
You know that quiet voice that you use for the Japanese schoolgirl? Yeah, you should have used that for the playing yourself. Unfortunately, Chris and Wayne would have announced it on the...
Yes, we would have. So, besides playing with yourself, what did you like about that character?
Nothing, because he didn't get to use it at all.
Yeah,
he didn't get to use any of the stats. Yeah. He didn't get to roll any dice, practically.
Oh, well, it never came up in the game, really. So, I actually have nothing to say about it.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of why I'd asked him, because I was a little bit disappointed.
Because he has nothing to say on it?
No. That too. I was disappointed that he has nothing to say. Also because, like, he had asked these questions, and he was kind of the only one who said, well, you know, how is sexuality seen in EP if you can just kind of swap bodies and do things? And I said, I don't know, that's for you to decide. And I had kind of hoped that would come up a little bit in the game, but then again, it was a one-shot, and so people are focused on the story and not that. But I guess it just gets back to it's a lot to juggle, and kind of like you said, Lyle, people should probably try and use training wheels rather than just jumping off the deep end and playing something completely wacky.
You know, Chris is pretty passionate about it, so I'm kind of coming around to jumping into the deep end if you want.
If Wayne wants you to, and the answer is no.
So I'm going to start in the clicks game.
But as far as exploring humanity, exploring sexuality and the concepts of that, that's really tough to do in a very short adventure.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, what does it mean to be human? You know, you're not going to answer that question in a few sessions. Yeah, especially when you got an adventure that has some sort of thing that you need to solve and figure out, because you're going to be focused on that. So how Yujiro was going to explore, you know,
himself.
Dude in a chick's body or vice versa. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Well, I thought the rationale behind the character was pretty interesting, Yuichi. You were telling me before that that combat body that you chose usually were women.
Yeah, to like tone down the aggression and encourage more like, what was it, group-oriented behavior. Yeah.
So is that why you just went along with everything everybody said?
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like it's interesting that you chose it specifically for like this, not necessarily mechanical, but kind of in setting reason. But you really explored it, albeit only in emails with Wayne.
It's kind of like that actor that writes a you know a 50-page biography for their character, and you know they're on in one scene that gets cut. There I am in the background.
So anyway, so knowing this was going to be a one shot and. Kind of, like I said, the way I see it is like a conspiracy horror game. There were a couple things I did as GM to try and, I guess, increase the paranoia among the players. And this was kind of inspired by Lyle's metagame ideas that you did during Hard Boiled. So there were three things I did. First, I gave all of the characters a secret, sort of a secret identity or a secret role that they were hopefully supposed to conceal from the other players. I gave them each a secret objective that was kind of at odds with the other players, but would kind of hopefully have them work together. And the last one I did was I sent a, air quote, fake message to everyone saying that there was a mole inside the group. So.
You should also say... Wayne, when you distributed the secrets, you put them in envelopes that had secret written on them.
Yes, that's right. So all the I put them up on 3x5 cards and little packets. And yeah, that is true. I did purposefully write top secret on each envelope, and I purposefully gave them to everyone inside of everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And inside those envelopes were little cards that had actions that your character could do.
Each card was basically be an asshole to the other players.
Well, yeah, I guess it wasn't only like be annoying to other players, but they were also hopefully kind of suspicious actions, such as go off by yourself or withhold information from another player or don't help when you are obviously the best choice for this.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully encourage you guys to use them. I gave a really small mechanical bonus, and all you had to do is when you did this action, you just handed me the card and you got some little bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping that the other players would see you handing in this card, know that you had done something suspicious or not, mm-hmm. but not know what it was. And I was hoping that that would also increase the distrust among the players and the characters.
Hmm. Kinda, because they're all the same, I think it lost a little bit of effectiveness. It clicked pretty quick with what Lyle and Yuichi were doing, that, well, these are the same kind of actions that I could do.
Right.
So it wasn't too hard to figure out which card they were using when they were using it. So, yeah, it was a good idea at its basis, but, yeah.
So doing it in the future, everybody's cards would have to be different so that you wouldn't know exactly what was happening.
Right. Also, maybe if they're a little bit more themed. Like, you gave us each a secret mission. Mm. If the cards had been based around that, then I might be wondering, what is his actual purpose? What's he really getting at now by using these cards? Whereas instead, since they were kind of disattached, it was just, he's using this card to build paranoia. Eh.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I tried to put a few in there that were either just blank or were actually positive,
mm-hmm.
so that other people would say, okay, did he play kind of a suspicious card, or did he use one that was blank, or did he actually do something kind of helpful?
Yeah.
But I guess from what you said, Chris, that didn't really work, and I should have made them a bit more themed.
Yeah, again, it's not that it was a bad idea, it's just that it was pretty easy to figure out what was going on.
Mm.
I liked it. I liked using the cards, that was good. I didn't like how the adventure started because of the paranoia. I kind of gave certain players, Chris, an excuse to be really
cagey,
obnoxious was the word I was going for. But
yeah, with your character's thing. So, what do you do? I can't tell you.
Yeah, but again, see, I thought you would have learned something from Changeling and would have made up a cover story instead of the classic, I can't tell you. Oh, what do you do?
That was a little frustrating because when you guys didn't have... we should probably explain, like, when in the Eclipse phase, if you're in a virtual meeting room or meeting space, it's very easy for people to get access to your information, your profile, and that would show up. So if somebody's profile doesn't show up,
that's a huge
the omission is, you know, raises red flags. Yeah, it's very conspicuous. So you would probably put, like, a fake profile.
That's what I was hoping that they would do. I guess hindsight, I should have, like, yeah. I guess I should have given people a cover identity.
Like, yeah, it would have helped to know, like, what my secret story is beforehand.
I had kind of hoped you would just make it up. Perhaps I should have said a card that said, make stuff up. If someone asks you a question, make it up. Mm. Don't say no.
I thought, again, when we get to, you're talking about the paranoia and that, I think the adventure itself did a really good job of setting that up. But again, it was, it made me, I guess to kind of summarize my feelings on that adventure and the game, I walked away thinking I really want to play a science fiction game. Mm. I really liked kind of the Event Horizon-esque kind of flavor it had, but it, I didn't necessarily think, oh, I really want to play another post-humanist game, because I don't think I got that out of that session. But I did enjoy the derelict spaceship aspect and exploring that. And
like, to be fair, I did use a published adventure, and the adventure assumed that all the players were already part of this sort of secret organization, and that's what held them together, and that's what would propel them on the adventure. Kind of as a GM, I said, that's boring, because in the setting, kind of this secret organization is supposed to be secret. And if all the players belong to it, I see that as kind of, well, being boring. So I had, Lyle, your secret identity was to be part of that organization, and both...
So I was the boring one, yeah.
Yeah, that's, well, I didn't see it as boring if only one person was in it.
Choice there, Wayne.
So I did kind of have to scramble at the beginning to figure, okay, yes, I'm trying to create paranoia, but I also have to create a solid enough reason for these characters to stick together who don't know each other. And so I used a missing NPC and gave all of your characters a reason to find this character or to be looking for this character, and then kind of hoped that you would work together since you were all looking for the same person. Maybe the only reason you guys stuck together is because you said, hey, this is a one-shot adventure and Wayne's running it, so we have to stick together.
Yeah, I'm surprised. The whole secret organization, Firewalls, it's called in the book, that doesn't strike me as boring at all, but you said it, Yuji, you're nodding your head, and I think you mentioned the same, Lyle.
What?
That Firewall, it seems like it would be a boring campaign, playing that secret organization.
I guess it's an easy default. It would be Training Wheels. Mm-hmm. You're protecting transhumanity from threats, both internal and external. So there's something opposing you, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just say, oh yeah, and explore what it is to be human now, I mean, that could be very tough to wrap an adventure or to think of, well, how am I going to play this? Mm. I know how to navel gaze it, and we can all just sit there. Around the table going, you know, what does it mean to be a dude in a woman's body? You know,
you know. I get to play with myself according to Yujiro. Yeah,
Yujiro going to the washroom frequently.
All right, next time we're playing EP, not at my place. We can play here, Chris.
Chris, do you have any more toilet paper? No. No, we don't, Yujiro. We're out. Sorry. But
and yeah, like EP struck me as like the ultimate sandbox as well. It seems like a game that's really great to just let the players go in.
Yeah, but I mean, Firewall, maybe our conception is, yeah, you're, you know, the Men in Black or mm-hmm. some sort of secret service, but it could be what we were as just a gangbanger, a hacker, and a corporate shill. And that's our face, but. Yeah. And underneath, we all work for the. Hmm. Underneath, we all work for Fireball, and that kind of binds us together. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was, and it happens in many games, so it's not a fault of this one in particular. But we just kind of went, well, we all know we gotta get together and right. play this game together. So let's just kind of get over the paranoia and you know, just do it.
Yeah,
but was there motivation for us to work together? Not especially. Hmm. Yeah. Not at the beginning, if no one was telling each other what they were bringing to the table.
And, well, I couldn't really bring anything either, because at least on my end, I didn't really have a whole lot of information about the missing NPC, so I was like, so what do you know about it? Nothing.
Well, no.
And that's a good point. So we all were at zero. So when you're at zero, you don't necessarily need to latch on to, like, two strangers that are at zero as well.
No, that's a good point. I guess that's I guess a way of looking at the situation that I hadn't anticipated. I had kind of seen it as, okay, none of you guys know anything. Therefore, hopefully you'll kind of work together to solve this, not potentially saying, okay, well, nobody has any information, therefore let's all individually go find someone who does and work together.
Well, like Lyle said, you know, we're all starting from zero. You don't need help from someone else who's starting at zero. And
especially
also
when you don't trust them.
Good point. And for myself, as a computer hacker, like, what assistance is a corporate goon and some chick who I don't know anything about?
Who looks like a cat in VR space.
Yeah, exactly. Why? How is this cat going to help me? Yeah. So,
I guess this isn't unique to Eclipse Phase, but because you can have someone who's so good at hacking, and because information is so freely available in the the setting, then I guess the person who would play sort of the social character and then the person who would play sort of the physical character, they either have to really step up and sort of in a sandbox kind of game make themselves useful, or the adventure has to be tailored where different characters get to shine at different parts.
Wait, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that the different roles are less useful. I mean, it's like a face character is, I think, even in this game, the most important character there is in a group. But and the muscle, maybe to a lesser degree, but more just because of the kind of game that you ran rather than the setting in general.
But there was a time, and I do feel kind of a little bit bad for it, Chris, where I actually told you to stop rolling.
And it was fair, too.
Because you had the best sort of research skills, and you just kind of, were very capable in finding out this information, when I wanted, hopefully, Lyle and Yujiro to try and use other methods to find this information.
I think you played it very well. You said this skill, which the other guys had, is going to be more applicable in this situation. That was very realistic. That was fine.
It's not like we weren't doing anything. I mean, we were telling Chris, research this.
Yeah.
And then we were putting our heads together after we would get the information to try to figure out what we would do with the information, tended to be, okay, now let's research another thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a Wikipedia hunt.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, it's interesting that the secret identity that you gave my character was the one part of the book that I ignored entirely, the psionics thing.
I'm kind of glad about that. I tried to think of something that maybe would not result in anyone being killed, but would definitely put you at odds with the other characters, which... Mm-hmm.
I ended up, I guess, in the epilogue, pretty much just killing everybody.
Yeah, you did, yeah. I think that's at the end when you passed that note that said, oh, by the way, and this NPC is getting killed on the way back. I think that was kind of funny.
I was like, yep, you've witnessed too much. That was pretty cool. I liked that.
I did like that.
I guess if we were all firewalled, then, it would have been easier to continue on. Mm-hmm. In a campaign, because
to killing your fellow characters,
right? Yeah, but yeah, you work together to clean up the mess, as opposed to me just going, "All right, well, we've seen it, and now Chris is freaking out, or Chris's character was freaking out."
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's compromised, and and I had that tense moment on the little ship, right? I locked them out.
There were quite a few of those. When we found the crashed ship, that was pretty freaky. You know, where is this missing android? Has it gone crazy?
As we get more familiar with the setting, certain clues. There was his cortex was taken out, and it was a little bit lost on us because we were still, it's just a head was ripped out. But
right,
yeah.
The impact of his cortex was taken out.
Yeah, that cortical stack is missing. Yeah.
The cortical stack. Thank you.
Also, in the botany center on the ship, the what was it called? The carniculture. And there's this huge carniculture plant, and there are three looks shared around, and it grows meat.
Oh! It was a carniculture unit, which I had read the adventure, but I thought carniculture was rather straightforward. But I suppose what I could have done is, it's one of those things where there's kind of a big disconnect between player knowledge and character knowledge. And perhaps I could have had you guys, roll a skill check, or I just could have said, your character would know that such and such and such is odd or out of place.
It is tough because if you just keep feeding the stuff to the players, it loses the impact. Mm. And that's just something that comes with playing more and more. I mean, when we looked at certain individuals and they were misshapen, we would always have to go, is this a weird misshapen or is this just standard? Yeah, it was all right. It was a lot to take in. Mm. It's a very... very dense setting. And, reading, because I'm currently reading the Ilium, it seems less dense, even though it's a very complex story. But it's a lot less dense than the actual Eclipse Phase game setting, although it has a lot of mysteries that in the book. So, yeah, could I play post-humanism, sure. Do I need to play it as Eclipse Phase? Not necessarily. The system's good. Yeah, it was a good system.
Yeah, I definitely did like the system.
Yeah,
it was fun.
All right, so it sounds like a lot of thumbs up for this game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely the system, definitely the setting. It kind of reminded me of a New World of Darkness game a little bit in that when you're reading it, it sounds, the setting sounds fantastic and you can't wait to run it, but then some of the stuff is really hard to translate over to when you're actually playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, if there is kind of a fault of the system, it would be that. I would say you would almost have to choose one or two elements of the setting to focus on in your game and focus on those and kind of have the other elements kind of be background stuff.
I agree.
And not worry about them so much.
I would also say don't do it as a one-shot. I know you originally wanted to do it as like a three-session right. kind of thing because it is so deep and also so new and different from what most players are used to. It's something that'd be really hard to do in just one.
Yeah, I really cannot see giving an Eclipse Phase character to a player that they haven't seen it before and just saying, okay, here, do this, just because, as we said, there is so much to remember.
By the way, you're an octopus.
Or in my game, by the way, you're a human, and you're a human.
Yeah, it's good. I don't think this is a great game for somebody who wants to take the role-playing to the next level.
Hmm.
It's not going to be your starter role-playing game.
No.
By any means. The system, if somebody else makes the character for you, is actually pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But the setting and character building are a bit intense. So.
Yeah. If anybody's out there playing a World of Darkness game, this is a really good alternative. It's a very sci-fi setting, but it still has a similar darkness kind of feeling to it.
For me, it felt similar to World of Darkness.
No, yeah. I'd agree with that. Wayne, don't make this an issue.
I shut up. I didn't say anything.
Leave the hair alone. Do that split. All right. Well, thank you for joining us again. Another episode of Idle Red Hands. Check us out online. You can listen to us on the website through Stitcher, through DriveThruRPG, or on iTunes. Post a message on the webpage, in our forums, on Facebook, or just send us an email. Remember, we got that great contest going through all of February. And, hope to hear from you.
Until February 50.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. See you later.
Thanks.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands is recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.